Hello and welcome to Alchemy 101, the show where we explore the golden path of transformation and aim to mine a few nuggets that can support us in living in line with nature in a way that's true to our nature, even though sometimes it might feel counterintuitive, like the nightingale, a bird that sings out in the dark. I'm JJ, otherwise known as the Practical Alchemist, and it's lovely to have you with me today. Did you know it's Walk Your Dog Month this January? I'm not sure why we need a whole month to focus on keeping ourselves and our dogs healthy. I would have thought that anyone with a dog will be walking their pet regularly anyway. It really is a great excuse to get out two or three times a day and get some excellent exercise. But maybe you have a dog walker to help out while you're at work, in which case this could be a reminder to make sure that you get some walks in either end of your working day. It's good for your dog and it's good for you. And if, like me, you don't have a dog, well, then let's make January a month to get into the habit of going for a walk regularly. It's one of the best forms of exercise, and if you can get into nature, so much the better. Nature can be a great healer, but today we're talking about a different form of healing. It's called EMDR, or Eye Movement Desensitization and Reprogramming. Time to call in the expert. And my guest today is Alice Vine, a forensic psychologist and director of a Lincoln-based mental health clinic called the Purple House Clinic. She's been supporting both adults and children with a range of mental health difficulties through several treatments since launching 6 years ago. But last year, Alice became one of only three people in the UK to qualify as a child and adolescent EMDR Europe trainer. Since then, she's been spreading the word and she's just trained her 50th clinician to deliver this form of treatment. EMDR has been around for some time to help people heal from trauma, but few people until now were qualified to work with children, so I was delighted to meet Alice and hear, first of all, how she describes this form of treatment.
The thing is, a lot of people have never heard of EMDR, so please explain exactly what it is and how it works, basically.
Okay, so EMDR was developed by Francine Shapiro, who was a clinical psychologist, and it's a trauma therapy that works on it. Memories are stored in a certain way, traumatic memories are stored in a certain way in the brain, and often when they're stored in trauma memory, they can come back as flashbacks or we re-experience them. So the brain kind of gets caught in a loop where we continually keep having those thoughts or flashbacks of what happens. So maybe in a car accident, for example, we might keep having that kind of example of when we got hit a tree or
point
whatever happened.
Yeah,
the impact of the tree. And then we might get caught with certain negative beliefs, such as I'm going to die. And then the brain gets stuck in terms of trauma memory and that keeps getting reactivated. So when we get back in a car or when we see a tree, that might come back. And so it gets caught in a loop in our brain and then we find it really difficult to process that. And so what EMDR does to help is it works on the feeling in the body and it works on the negative cognition. So that time as the tree's about to hit the car, the car's about to hit the tree and that impact's about to happen and that negative thought we had at that time, I'm going to die. And then we use eye movements or we can do different type of bilateral stimulation, which might be tapping from side to side. So bilateral is from one side to the other, or eye movements where we go from one side to the other side. And that helps, the bilateral stimulation helps to process the memory. So it moves from a trauma memory into autobiographical memory. So then it's still a distressing memory that we just had, but it's not with all the associated feelings and sensations in our body and the negative thought that I'm going to die. So it moves towards a more adaptive resolution of, I survived, I'm okay, it's in the past, it's over now.
Yeah. Which is a great thing to be able to facilitate for people. Now, I qualified in NLP, and we do a certain things to do with eye movements there. And I know as a result of my studies and, NLP qualifications that our eyes do move in certain ways related to memory and feeling and association. So just that's what's coming into it as well, isn't it?
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
And so do you so how did I mean what I'm trying to get at, I guess, when I'm sort of stumbling to sort of frame the question is what do you actually do to change that pattern? I mean, are you moving your finger so that the eye's following it? That's explain that to us.
Yes. So when we're in the desensitization phase, so the assessment phase is setting up all of the things I've talked about. What's the worst part? What are the negative cognitions associated, which is a thought? So the negative thought, I'm going to die. And then in the desensitizing, where we're desensitizing people to the trauma memory, we're asking them to follow our fingers from left to right. And we go fairly quickly, but we're helping them, that helps them to process and they go through the memories. But they do it in a way that doesn't require talking.
Yeah, that's key, isn't it?
Yeah.
Not having the verbals associated with it, so that the brain can deal with it on a subconscious level, I guess.
Yes. Yeah.
Fantastic. And then now, you are working with children and adolescents on this. Now,
Yeah.
I know that a lot of people may not have heard of EMDR, although. A friend of mine has recently got herself onto a course of treatment with that, and I was speaking to somebody this morning who said I'd never heard of it before until my friend said that she was having some of that. But it's a very outwardly simple thing, but it's really interesting how it can deal with deep trauma and catching it. In children and adolescents is really important, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, I think it's so important because it can help prevent longer term problems in a child or young person's mental health. And I think the earlier you can intervene, often the better in terms of being able to help them create those new neural pathways in their brain that means they're not stuck in trauma.
Which a lot of us have had for many, many years, and
Yes.
never even had it diagnosed. And you also talk about how this trauma can be in utero, even before we're born. So
Yes.
how do you work with that?
And that's, yes, it can affect. So children, young people that I work with may have been affected by things that have happened in utero. It could be if they're in a situation where parents are in quite a chaotic relationship with domestic violence, for example. And we know that hearing develops as young as 7 weeks gestation. So what I find with those children is they're incredibly sensitive to noises and sounds. And then when they have situations in their life now, when they're in primary school maybe, and a teacher raises their voice, or not even raises their voice, sometimes they just assume that somebody's angry at them. So with that, we can do narratives, we can do stories, and we can do tapping to help them process. So when we use EMDR with children and adolescents, it's slightly different than the adult protocols, and we may adapt those to suit developmentally where a child's at.
And how do you know that a child needs that? I know that you are a psychologist anyway, but how do you know that this is the thing that a child could benefit from?
Well, often it's a bit of a, you have to go in a bit like Cluedo and find out exactly what's gone on, and you're kind of using some educated guessing, some hypothesizing. You're using your parents as a really good resource to find out what kind of things may have happened. But often what you're seeing is the behavior of the child. So with children, it manifests in terms of behavioral difficulties. So you might have prolonged tantrums. You might have a lot of kind of self-blaming or saying they're rubbish or things if they've got words at that point. But if, in very young ones, you'll get a lot of behavioural problems and difficulties that nursery schools might be suggesting are happening.
Right, so that's so that's how they express themselves because they don't have the verbal ability to express themselves otherwise. Yeah, and how young do you work with people with children?
So a lot of people in the EMDR community who work with children and adolescents have worked with very little ones. I've worked with 2-year-olds who've had kind of separation anxiety, have had nappy rash. And you're working with the parent, really. The parent needs to be there. You can get a parent to do some tapping. You can do some tapping. And you're just using words that might be quite emotionally charged, like sore, nappy. And then you're just doing some tapping. Yeah. And sometimes that really helps just to calm and regulate the nervous system. And you can see changes. So I've worked with a 2-year-old who was very worried because she'd been given to her granddad when she was, I think, just under two years old. And granddad had walked off around his big, large farm. And she'd come back and she was crying hysterically because mummy had gone to the toilet. And so then that produced lots of separation anxiety, which was causing mum and the little girl much distress. So we did a story about mummy coming back, but this little girl feeling very scared. And we just showed a picture of granddad. And granddad was getting very distressed because he couldn't be with his granddaughter because his granddaughter would show this immense distress in her body when she next saw him. So we just did some gentle tapping, sitting on mum's lap, and it seemed to process something to the point that she was then able to go with granddad.
And that's just brilliant. And it is extraordinary, isn't it, how it can be, to us adults, small things that cause these traumas in children and stay with us for the rest of our lives if they're not treated. You know, to us, that's quite a small thing. But to that child, it was horrendous. Yeah.
Yeah. But then if we think back as adults and we think back at those times that have stayed with us, they might be school memories. They might be times where that teacher did shout at us. I have a memory of having a chalk thrown at me and I still have that very vivid recollection of that. So,
yeah, no, I have not quite that same memory, but I have similar memories of being at school. Yeah. And it can be traumatic. And these things are still in my memory at my old age. And that's, you know, that you have to think about that, don't you? And I think that when I was at primary school, particularly, there wasn't quite the same understanding of how to work with children. It was much, much stricter and much more kind of do as I say right now or else, you know. Yeah. And now I do remember actually being, I never, because in Scotland, when I was at primary school, they still had the belt to as corporal punishment.
Yes.
And so there was always the threat of the belt if you didn't behave or didn't do something. And I always remember being threatened with six of the best because I couldn't, in the time allotted, learn a poem off by heart. Because I was just too, goodness. I was just too kind of, you know, stressed by the idea that I had to do it. And we all, there were about half a dozen of us, we all got lined up in front of the class and told to learn it by the end of the period or else we would get, we'd get punished.
Oh my gosh.
That wouldn't happen today. And that has stayed in my mind forever. So, and, you know, the teacher would not have thought of that at all in those days.
No.
I'm not saying that any teacher today would do anything like that. And anyway, we don't have corporal punishment in schools. But it's that kind of thing, isn't it, that we overlook?
Yes, absolutely. And it does. It has an imprint. And then when you go into subsequent situations as an adult, you can still get that feeling, that core feeling that's held in your body of fear or worrying about what's going to happen if you don't remember something in the right way.
In my case, performance anxiety, I suppose.
Absolutely.
Which I've had to overcome. Yeah. Yes. And so it's extraordinary, though, that you work with children as young as two. You wouldn't work with a baby, though, would you? That would be too hard. I mean, a baby, as in a you know, fairly newborn.
Yeah, I think we do lots of bilateral stimulation with babies anyway. We do lots of rocking to
True.
And fro. Sometimes I mean, certainly with my own children, I would just tap from side to side on their shoulders, but generally just to kind of help them to regulate, help them to calm.
Yeah, and it sounds in many ways very similar to CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy. Is there a parallel there? Is there a similarity?
With CBT, you're not really working with the body as such. I mean, you think about emotions and you think about the physical sensation, but there's something with the bilateral stimulation added and the eye movements or the tapping that helps you help somebody to process it, and they are able to come to an adaptive resolution where their body feels calmer. I don't think CBT does that in the same way as EMDR does.
No, I don't think it does. I just was interested to hear you, draw the distinction between the two, because some people listening might think, well, that sounds a bit similar, because we're talking about behaviours with, younger kids, and we're talking about dealing with that through things like tapping. And then we've talked about very young children. What about the adolescents? Because you work with adolescents as well. Is there much of a difference there?
Well, the adolescent brain tends to be going through a huge period of change, but all these neuronal kind of synapses are being changed and altered. And so the brain is going through a huge change period where there's lots of pruning and things are changing. And I love the Inside Out films.
Right.
The Inside Out films have lots of characters describe different emotions, and the new one that's come out recently, lots of children, young people have seen, but has the new adolescent emotions like anxiety, boredom, shame. I think shame is one that there's a long time. It's more embarrassment that a lot of adolescents might have. But yes, working with adolescents is really, really rewarding, I would say. But they have lots of worries about their identity, about moving away. I mean, middle childhood, really kind of 10, 11, 12, they move away from parents and peers become much more important to them. So they go towards peers for advice and things, but sometimes that can be problematic. And especially in this world of social media.
Gosh, yeah.
Where they can never turn it off. So they get home from school, and then if there's bullying going on, that's happening even after school, and they can encroach in their bedrooms and their safe place. So working with teenagers, you're doing lots of processing of things, trauma that might have happened earlier on or during their teenage years that might be affecting their sense of identity and who they are.
Great stuff. Well, there's lots more to come from Alice Vine about the fantastic work that she does at her clinic there. But first, it's time to hear some messages from our sponsors. So sit back and relax. We will continue right after this.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
You're listening to Alchemy 101 with me, JJ, the Practical Alchemist, and my guest today, Alice Vine, psychologist and EMDR practitioner. Before the break, she was telling us about young people, and she mentioned that children aged 11 or 12 start to move away from their parents. It struck me that this is the age when we move from primary school up to secondary education, and I asked her if that was part of this shift.
Absolutely. Developmentally, that's when they would look towards their peer group more and be influenced more by peers.
Yeah.
So peers become more of an influence maybe than parents do. I think parents still have, it's still really important to keep them close.
Of course,
but certainly peers become more important.
Yeah. The teenager can be problematic at the best of times, I guess. But then when you layer on trauma, early trauma on top of that, you get even further into the realm of problematic behaviour, I guess.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And so tell me, I mean, I think it's wonderful that we now are using this more, but it's not, EMDR isn't very widespread at the moment, is it? Or am I wrong here? I mean, I've known about it for a long time, but I
Okay.
often speak to people who say, "What's that?" So how much do you think people know about it these days?
I think it's a lot more well known than when I did my training. So that was
Right.
20 years ago when I first trained in EMDR, and I think would say it was very unknown then. I think the EMDR community is a lot larger than it was. But I agree. I think there's still pockets that haven't heard of it. I think with some celebrities now undertaking EMDR, their own EMDR therapy. So I think Miley Cyrus, who else has had quite a few people, Sandra Bullock, I was reading about the other
Oh,
day.
really?
So I
Yeah.
think the more people have therapy that are well known, then they talk about it and they talk about how that's impacted them. I think it becomes more widespread and more known about.
I'm just thinking back to when I did my NLP training, which was about 20 odd years ago as well. So I'm kind of
Yeah.
thinking that maybe that's still what I'm thinking of in terms of not very many people know about it, because that would have been when I first really got to know about EMDR myself.
Okay. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, it is interesting, but I rarely speak to people who say that they have experienced it as a therapy. So I did wonder how many people are aware of it. But it's great that you are now, making people more aware of what's out there and what the possibilities are. And just to go on from that, I mean, tell me a few more instances of what EMDR can do to help. I mean, trauma, yes, but maybe let's have a look at some of the behavioral issues that might throw up EMDR as a possible therapy.
So some attachment difficulties that might come out in difficult behaviors. So children might engage in a kind of push-pull, wanting parents close, but then becoming quite angry. And some of their behaviors might be, they might have severe tantrums, they might push, they might be aggressive in some respects. And that often, when you start to look at it and think, what is this about? You can start to disentangle it and think, what are the origins in terms of some trauma, some aspects of trauma, which might, as you say, not be what we would typically think of as traumatic. And when I ask parents, I will get a very good history and they will think, oh, well, that doesn't sound particularly traumatic. It might be a lost teddy bear that did cause a child real distress. It could be that a parent has had to go into hospital for a period of time, and that's caused distress and attachment loss at a time when a child's brain is quite vulnerable. And then you might get behavioural outbursts or difficulty sleeping at night, or lots of different things might suggest that something has been traumatic. They might have a real difficulty going to somewhere. So if they've had a difficult experience in hospital, so a medical procedure that was quite difficult, then they might find it really difficult to go back to hospitals and they might become quite avoidant. So that would be an indication that obviously they're going to need to go to hospital in the future. That might be a time where you really need to intervene.
Yes, and are there cases where, rather than the child acting out, they actually become more introvert? Is that an issue as well?
Yes, absolutely. So they might become very silent, very quiet, not be able to tell you what has happened. So a child that's been quite happy, quite rounded in their personality, quite spontaneous, might start to become quite fearful of change, and not want to do things that parents are suggesting, might come across as quite avoidant. So absolutely, they might become very the opposite and very insular and wanting to spend time on their own.
So, if a parent is listening to this and they think that, maybe they would need to go down the route of seeing whether they can get their child accepted for MDR EMDR therapy, nearly said something else there, EMDR therapy, you know, what's the first step? Can you access it on the NHS here in the UK? I know that we have listeners all over the world, but here in the UK, is that possible, or does it have to be a private thing? What's the situation?
There's lots more NHS services offering it. There's lots. So I facilitate on basic trainings, and we have a lot more NHS clinicians coming to that to train. I supervise currently quite a few CAMS services, and you can certainly get EMDR with CAMS clinicians.
Right. And so just to explain what that is for anybody who doesn't know.
It's child and adolescent mental health services within the NHS.
Right. Yeah.
So certainly you can get it privately, you can get it via the NHS.
Right. So privately through the NHS, though, but not as an NHS service.
No, sorry. You can get it either privately, so you can pay for it, or you can get it through the NHS.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Good to clear that one up.
Yeah.
And so, again, just thinking about somebody thinking, well, maybe that's worth trying because I have an issue here, or we have an issue here as a family. What are the first steps? Do you just, there is a directory, presumably, of EMDR therapists, and where do people find that? Is that easy to do? I mean, how do you go about that first getting into that assessment area?
So if you look on the EMDR UK website, they have a map. And you can put in the what you're looking for. I would tend to say what you have on that map is you have people that are trained to become practitioners. So they've had a good level of experience of using EMDR. So they're either practitioners or consultants. So consultants are people that have been using EMDR for a long time and are trained to be able to supervise other people in their EMDR practice.
Right.
So on that map, you can then put the area you're in. You can find out geographically where you want a therapist, and you can put in whether you want them to specialise in adults, teenagers, or adolescents and children.
Right. So that's quite. And then it's just a case of contacting whoever comes up and saying,
absolutely.
You know, and then I'm assuming that because you know you've already said that you will find out the background. So there's an interview process like there would be with any therapist. You would talk about background and you know what may have led to the issue that you're dealing with.
Absolutely. I'd want parents to come in initially first, or I sometimes invite the whole family to come in because that gives me really good clues as to how they've all dealt with something. And sometimes I'll say something really horrible happened to this family, and then see how the storytelling happens and how everybody has their own role within that.
Yeah, and you can see the dynamic as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and see what people are saying and how they're behaving and interacting with each other. Yeah, that's really a good idea, actually, yeah. So it seems like, you know, it's really worthwhile thinking about if parents do have an issue with their children, whether they, you know, if they think that their child has had some kind of trauma that might be causing them to act out or behave in a way that's not quite, you know, the way you would hope.
Yes.
I don't want to say normal or abnormal because that's neither here, you know, that doesn't really come into it. It's whether you think that a child is really either acting out or behaving in a way where you think something might be going on that is causing that behavior, which you don't think is quite right. Yeah. And so then you obviously, you train people in EMDR. You train people in EMDR for children as well, don't you?
Specifically. So I facilitate on basic training with Sandy Richmond, who's a very experienced EMDR trainer. And then I specifically train people to work with children and adolescents. So that's after they've done the basic training.
I was going to say, so they have to have done the basic EMDR training and then say, okay, I'd actually like to specialize in children and adolescents. But you can't just go straight in at the, you know, I'm going to work with children.
And they have to go through that process.
Yeah, understandably. And how long is that training process? I think people might want to know.
So everybody who goes on to basic EMDR training has to have a mental health background.
Right. So you mean what? So
they have to be mental health nurses. They have to be psychologists. They have to be psychotherapists. They have to be social workers, maybe, that have had specific training in mental health. So they have to have a core background in mental health and have an awareness how to assess, how to treat and work with mental health.
Right. Yeah. Because I think that's important that people know that.
Yes.
Because absolutely. A lot of people are very skeptical of things that they might not have heard and they might think are a bit sort of new and fancy and, you know, maybe not the thing that they need. But it's really important to know that you have to have that background before you can train in this. And so that you're going to get people who really understand, have that psychology background and can really work effectively.
Absolutely.
With the client. Yeah. So that is fantastic. And you, as I say, you do train and you're based in Lincoln, which is in Lincolnshire. No, you're based in Lincoln, actually, aren't
based
you?
Based in Lincoln.
The city of Lincoln, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember you said to me your office overlooks the cathedral, which is gorgeous.
Yeah, it's lovely.
So people can get in touch with you there. If people do want to get in touch with you, I mean, are you happy for people to just contact you with general queries about EMDR or
absolutely,
And so where do people find out more about you and your clinic?
So on the Purple House website, if you go to, and then we've a number of different clinics come up, and I'm Purple House Lincoln,
right?
So if you just click on that, then it'll have my details on there. And it'll have contact details and our email address. So people can come through to the generic email address and then I'm happy to
answer
any questions. Yeah.
And just to a word about the Purple House, I mean, that's just a group of clinics, isn't it?
Yes, it's a collection of clinics that offer psychological assessment and intervention. Not just psychological. I mean, our clinic does a lot of work with adoptive families and children, and children who've had those kind of complex developmental trauma. So that's happened from when they're very young and happened from attachment losses, really, from birth families. So we have a number of professionals which really help to kind of make that multidisciplinary team. So we're lucky we've got speech and language therapists. We've got occupational therapists who do sensory intervention. So really sensory integration work is very much working with the body and things that may have been missed when they were younger.
Well, that's really good to know. And they're spread out over the UK or just over England?
No, we've got across the UK. So we've got one in Edinburgh, one in Glasgow. We've got one in Rugby, one in Birmingham, one in Sheffield, and then Lincoln. Have I missed any? I'm trying not to miss any.
Well,
yeah,
I'm sure
they're all across.
I'm sure if anybody wants to find out, they can go onto the website and find out.
Absolutely.
But yeah, well, it's been wonderful to speak with you today. And thank you so much for joining me and sharing about EMDR. Because, like I said, you know, to start with, I think a lot of people really haven't heard of it still, don't know what it does and don't understand that it is a proper therapy that is really quite effective. And I think it's brilliant that you're working with children now, because heavens, you know, if only some of us adults could have had some of these traumas dealt with in childhood, where would we be now? We'd maybe have had a different life altogether.
Yeah, and that's what's so lovely. I think you see children blossom kind of socially and emotionally post EMDR trauma work. It's lovely to see.
it's just beautiful. So thank you so much for the work you do. And I look forward to seeing many more people experiencing EMDR and getting rid of all those traumas that, let's face it, most of us have suffered from at one point or another.
Yeah.
So thank you so much, Alice.
Thank you. You're welcome.
So there you are, EMDR explained for you. Do contact Alice if you want to know more. And we probably didn't make it totally clear that one of the benefits of this type of work over any talking therapy, for instance, is that there's no need to revisit any trauma, to talk about it, no need to go over all the bad stuff, to relive it. You can remain detached while you free yourself of what doesn't serve you. And that is a fantastic thing. Time for a fantastic break right now, though. I'll be back with some news and reviews right after this.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
And this is Alchemy 101 here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio station. I'm JJ, the Practical Alchemist, and I'm introducing some new occasional segments to the show this year. Here's a taste of things to come. JJ's Health Review. As we continue to make our way through winter here in the Northern Hemisphere, it's a good move to make sure our immune system is up to scratch, and a good supplement can help you do that. One brand that I've tried in the past is Inessa, and they sent me their immune-boosting complex to try this year. I interviewed the founder of the brand, Lisa Magary, on this show a while back, and I've always been impressed by the quality and ingredient formulas of their products. The Inessa Immune Complex doesn't disappoint. It has black elderberry. I always thought elderberries were black anyway, but apparently there is another kind of elderberry. So this is black elderberry. That's rich in antioxidants, as well as high-strength vitamin C and vitamin D. It's also got zinc, selenium, and two of my favourite medicinal mushrooms, reishi and chaga. It's a great combo and a good price at £24.99 for a month's supply. That's in pounds sterling. Another great recipe from Inessa is in their Relax and Calm, designed to help deal with stress and overwhelm, which I'm sure you'll agree we all suffer from now and again. It's a blend of ashwagandha, L-theanine, saffron, lemon balm and chamomile with vitamin B5 as an added de-stressor and biotin to support normal psychological function. And that's £32.99 for 30 days supply. And if you want to find out more, head over to inessawellness.com. I don't have anything to gain financially here, you know, just happy to review a good product or two. Plant of the day. We have to give a mention to snowdrops, the first flowers we see as we move through January into March. They're a woodland species and you may have enjoyed seeing them in the wild on winter walks or as an ornamental plant in your garden. But did you know that there's more to snowdrops than their sheer beauty? They have been used over the years, traditionally, to treat headaches and migraines. That's in folk medicine. But more recently, another use has been found. A compound in the bulb called galantamine, well, that's named after the Latin name for snowdrops, is used for Alzheimer's disease and also for traumatic brain injuries. The galantamine helps to strengthen nerve signals and it reduces the confusion associated with dementia. Snowdrops are full of alkaloids, flavonoids, phenolics and terpenoids, but it's not a plant that you might eat willy-nilly. In fact, the bulbs are pretty toxic, and not just to humans. There's a protein in the snowdrop that can bind to cell membranes and kill pests. So there is a dark side to this beautiful flower. Now, the flower on its lighter side signifies purity and hope, as you might expect, because it heralds in the spring and rebirth. I love seeing carpets of the plants all amongst the woodland trees, and I'll be looking to take a snowdrop walk near me very soon. Books for better health. Talking of woodland, I want to mention a book that's been on my bookshelf for a while now, and I love dipping into it. It's called Forest School for Grown-Ups: Explore the Wisdom of the Woods, and it's by Richard Irvin, and it's published by Head of Zeus. Now, forest schools originated in Scandinavia as an outdoor play-based learning for children. And while the benefits were soon recognised around the world, this author, Richard Irvin, asked, why should the kids have all the fun? The book explores how adults can enjoy the benefits of forest schools and outdoor learning, how to connect with green spaces and trees and plants so that we can lift our spirits, reduce our stress, and generally improve our well-being. Honestly, there's so much knowledge in this book, and loads to learn, including skills like how to find your way in the woods, make a chair out of what you find in the woods, or whittle cooking utensils. But there's also loads of information on plants, survival skills, cooking what you find in the woods, and so much more. The author, Richard Irvin, is an experienced outdoor educator, trainer and writer who specialises in experiential learning in woodlands, so you know you're in safe hands. That's Forest School for Grown-Ups, and I have to tell you, it really hits the spot with this tomboy inner child in me. And that just about brings us to the end of today's show. If you want to find more out about me, then do check out my website, thepracticalalchemist.uk. You'll find out all about my coaching and mentoring offering, as well as my energy clearing work there. You'll also find all the links to anything that I'm up to and my social media channels, which include my new YouTube channel, Alternatively Speaking. I upload a short video there every day, Monday to Friday, as well as some long-form video interviews with experts and thought leaders, mostly in the well-being field. The aim is to support you as we move through changing and very possibly troubling times ahead. Oh, and don't forget the interview that I did with Robert Manny for his Guy's Guy radio show here on UK Health Radio and elsewhere. You'll find it on his podcast, which you can find all over the world, wherever you listen to your podcasts. And I also did an interview recently with Liz Larson and Bill McKenna, which you'll also find on their page here on UK Health Radio. And that was great fun as well. I did a reciprocal interview with them, which you'll find on my show page. And that was massive fun. We ended up talking about all sorts of things: Scotland, magic, healing, transformation, everything that you could want to hear. So do check out both of those, or all three of those rather. And I'd be absolutely delighted to hear what you think. So check out New Life Perspectives. That's the show with Liz Larson and Bill McKenna. And you'll find me talking with them there. And then check out their show on my show page on Alchemy 101. And if you listen to theirs first and then mine, that's the sequence to go in. But also you'll find them on YouTube, and you'll find links on my channel. I will be getting those videos up very soon. So that's New Life Perspectives with Liz and Bill, and also the Guys Guys show with Robert Manny. For now, though, it's just time to say thank you for listening. Join me next time for more Practical Alchemy. Until then, it's goodbye from me and that nightingale.